I wouldn't say we fell in love right away. I think we were, as they call it in the biz, trauma bonding.
And then after 8 years of being insufferably sober, I started drinking again.
Addicts tend to be rather sensitive people.
Aren't you Marc Maron? I'm like, yeah. And she goes, what happened to you?
Hi, this is Anna David. You're listening to Recover Girl. It's a podcast about addiction recovery and using your dark to find your light. I am your host, and that's obvious since I am the one talking. This is a podcast that's kind of been around a minute. You know, it started off with just interviews with people in person, live in person, asking them about their addiction and recovery. Took a brief foray into talking to people about other issues. Now we're back talking, well, a lot of talking to people about addiction and recovery, but we're in a transition time. And you know that because this podcast used to be every other week. Now it's twice a week. Sometimes there are episodes that are snippets from my live storytelling show. Sometimes they're snippets from my Facebook Lives that I do every Tuesday at 4 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. If you want to check that out, go to facebook.com/AnnaBDavid. Speaking of Facebook, do you want to message me? I have a cool surprise for you if you do. Message me on Facebook at m.me/AnnaBDavid. Now, if you're driving, don't sit there and take out a pen and write this down, although I love you for caring that much. Just remember, or maybe you're at the stoplight now, it's m.me/AnnaBDavid. Yeah, or you can just go to my page and message me from there. facebook.com/AnnaBDavid. Let's get into it. Today's episode is one of those ones that's from my Facebook Live interviews. So the sound isn't perfect, but it's a great interview. It's with my friend Garrett Haid. Now, if you've listened to previous episodes, you may know Ryan Hampton, or maybe you just know Ryan Hampton because the dude's out there a lot. He's one of my closest friends. Garrett is his right hand and his left hand. They're best friends. But officially, Garrett is the LA Outreach Coordinator for Facing Addiction. He travels with Ryan all over. They are like Tonto and whatever of the addiction recovery space. They're amazing guys. He's in recovery himself. He and Ryan started something called D4 Strategy. They met in there in treatment. If you listen to the previous episode with Ryan, he talks about how Garrett saved his life. And I was sitting there with him and he got a little teary. But Garrett and Ryan are together changing the way treatment is done, helping to crack down on treatment centers that are completely shady, and changing the perception of addiction and recovery out there. He's a complete doll, and he's usually a little bit behind the scenes as Ryan kind of takes center stage. So it was my pleasure to interview Garrett on Facebook, and it is now my pleasure to give you this interview. So this is Garrett Haid.
Well, hi, guys. I'm Anna David. Welcome to my show. Maybe this needs a name. I'm here with one of my new favorite people, Garrett Haid. I can't remember how. Oh, yeah, look at him. And I'm excited to do this because Garrett, wouldn't you say we've been around each other a lot?
Yeah.
We have holding my head the same size as yours. But we haven't spoken directly that much. And what better opportunity is there for us to speak than with other people watching, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know if I think you're too young to have ever seen Truth or Dare, but Madonna says there's no point in having a conversation unless there's a camera on you. So that's really what we're doing.
I don't know about a camera on me all the time, but.
Look at that mug. It should be. Okay. Oh, look, Kyle's here. Yay.
Hi, Kyle.
So Garrett Haid is somebody who in a very, very short period of time has managed to make a huge impact in terms of the recovery advocacy movement. I'm going to let Garrett give his official introduction, but in under 3 years of sobriety, let's talk a little bit about what you've been able to accomplish.
Sure. So my name is Garrett. I'm a person in long-term recovery. And for me, that means I haven't used drugs or alcohol since March 3rd, 2015. My title, I guess you want to call it, or what I have actually done in the last 2.5 years I'm sure everybody is well aware of who Ryan Hampton is, but that is my best friend, business partner, roommate. We've kind of been like inseparable for the last 5 years. So I am not a person who's exactly comfortable being on cameras, and Ryan, of course, is. But my roles have been, I'm sorry?
You're breaking up for me. I don't know if you guys chime in and let us know if you can hear Garrett. I'm not sure.
Can anybody hear me?
Let us know, Kyle, you guys, the other people who are here. I could fill in some of the blanks, but just in case anybody didn't get that, Garrett is somebody who works with Ryan Hampton, who has been featured previously on this. And Garrett is very much the sort of behind the scenes guy. And he just said that it's sort of his nightmare to be on camera, which is kind of great when you're the person who is helping his nightmare come true. But I think that that's very interesting too, because, you know, I've become really close with Ryan, and I didn't really get to hear you talk much. I mean, you come to my shows. I didn't get much of an opportunity to hear you talk until recently. And I was like, oh my God, like I relate to everything he's saying. So I don't know if this is my intervention where I'm saying, Garrett, come out and talk more publicly. But because I think you have a lot to say, and I think you're a very effective behind the scenes guy, but it wouldn't hurt to get you out there more. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, of course. You know, and it was Ryan who actually kind of inspired me to first tell my story, and it gave me power to like come out as a person in recovery. I was very apprehensive to do it. I didn't want to do it. And a lot of it had a hold on me, especially about being arrested multiple times or being a convicted felon, and all these things would like weigh down on me when I would talk about them. And, you know, seeing Ryan go out there and be brave about it, and seeing people like Anna do it, like you, and everybody else, it kind of just gave me I'm more than willing to talk about it if given the opportunity. It's just something that I'm still working on, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought it up, because, you know, it's a huge passion of mine to help people share their stories, and in the process, not just help destigmatize, but help them break the stigma around themselves. You know, I personally have found a lot of healing, not just from writing about my experiences, but from sharing them and having people react to them. So what would you tell people who are struggling? I get emails from people all the time who want to write about their recovery and are scared. They want to do it under a pen name. What would you recommend for people like that?
I mean, the only thing I can really recommend is to just do it. Like, that's all I did. I listened to people that were like, like you see somebody, it was the anonymous people when that first came out, and me and Ryan were sitting down and at the end of the movie, the Eminem song plays. It's like, I'm not afraid. And me and Ryan were sitting there like, oh my God, this is incredible. Like, people are actually out there and talking about this. And what it did for me is when I did it, my best advice is to just do it. Because, like, all of a sudden, like, my mom started to talk to me about this. And she still asked me, you know, she'd be like, are you really a drug addict? Is that what the word, like, are you a drug addict? And I'm like, no, mom, you know, I'm a person in recovery now. That was the life that I lived. That's kind of what I was trapped in. But, you know, now my sister, she's written about it for Ryan. And, you know, she's told about her end of what she had to witness as me going through that. And it has empowered my family, my friends, and myself. So the best advice I can say is just do it, because you'll be really surprised, you know, how many people will support you once you takes the fear and the power out of everything.
I'm so glad there are so many things you brought up that I think are important. First of all, I will say my first book is about addiction. And at my book party, my mom came up to me and was like, I just met your friend's father. His son is a drug addict. And I'm like, yeah, mom, so am I. That's what my entire book is about. And she was just like, no, a real drug addict.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I know what that is. But I'm so glad you brought up talking to family members, because I think it is very, very hard for people who are not suffering or have not struggled with addiction to actually understand what it is, because there are so many misconceptions out there. And I do think, you know, the storytelling that I teach people to do in rehabs is about learn how to talk about it so that you can explain it to the people.
Exactly.
Does your family have any wariness about you coming out and talking about all of this stuff, like that it reflects on them?
I don't think so anymore. My sister was never afraid to say it. And once I was in recovery, she wasn't, and knew I was okay. She wasn't afraid. My mom was a little more apprehensive. She sounds a lot like your mom because, like, she when she said that drug out, she, like, whispered it to me. There's nobody around, but she's like, do the drug. You know, so I'm sorry. What was the question again?
No, it's good. That just like, okay, because I know my mom has a thing. A little bit of her is like, I gave birth to a drug addict. You know what I mean? Where she has this thing that it's, that it reflects on her.
Yeah. And you know, it's, my mom doesn't tell my family, like I would go, I'd be doing really bad, but somehow I'd be on 4 vacations a year. So like, you know, like my, where's Garrett? Oh, he's traveling. And like, he travels a lot. He's not really doing much, right? Like, how does he travel so much? And that's because I was in treatment or in jail. But now she actually can tell people that, oh, he really is traveling, you know, he's doing things. And so she is a little more open to speak about it. My sister is too. I think me being okay with talking about it has really allowed them to. And then my mom now can talk about my dad's problem. My dad passed away over a decade ago as a result of alcoholism. But I never knew he was sober because we hid everything. But I didn't know that he was, you know, a person in recovery for over a decade, and then he did have a reoccurrence of use. I didn't know any of this until I found recovery, and then the family kind of started discussing things, and it, you know, it led to his death. But we talk about it now, and that's kind of like me coming out and saying it was okay to talk about. Like in my struggles, she was like, okay, well, your father had a problem. He had a problem with alcohol. He had a problem with sleeping pills and gambling, and we discuss these things now. It's not like a shameful discussion anymore.
I think that's, I've almost never heard of somebody having a sober parent and not knowing that that person was sober.
No idea. It was a crazy story. I was traveling to Florida and my sister's, one of her old friends was like, you know, she's in recovery now too. And we've connected. And she's like, you know, I used to go into your parents' room and she'd be, and she, you know, would take things. And in her disease, and she'd be like, and I used to see your dad's, she didn't know what they were at the time either, but she used to see the medallions and the tokens of time. And hey, Miles, it's my sponsor.
I remember Miles. Oh, hey, we all had dinner a long time ago.
Yeah, but she, and this was in recovery that I found out that he had that, and I didn't know any of that before. And then I was able to sit down with his oldest friend, who was like, yeah, me and your dad struggled with gambling addictions and we were in recovery from it for a long time.
I think this is another interesting point, you know, because we are of the generation. I'm going to call us the same generation. Why not? I'm a Gen Xer. I think you're a millennial. But still, we are of the group that is talking about things that, you know, and our parents talked about a lot more, at least in my family, than their parents did. Yeah. But I, too, had addiction in my family. And I had no idea at all. Yeah. And, you know, I think that's another thing about sharing our stories is that we're helping to break the patterns. You know, first of all, getting sober is helping to break the patterns. But I think it's such an interesting thing that you can actually almost go back in time and heal because you're now getting this information about your dad.
Yeah.
And okay. And so a lot of the work that you do, will you describe the day-to-day work that you guys are doing? Cool.
So, day to day, it changes all the time. You know, managing multiple social platforms at a time. If you look at our office spaces, there's just computers everywhere. And it's like Ryan's page and Facing Addiction and Addiction X America and the Voices Project. So we're always scrolling the news. We're always going through the Voices Project. We're trying to, determine who's going up that day and blah, blah, blah. But that's like continuously every single day. Recently, like last weekend, we got in the car, Chad Sabora came and visited us, and we went to sober livings and treatment centers, and Chad donated his time, you know, thank God for him, and taught how to appropriately use and administer Narcan. And, you know, some things like that where we met with congresswomen to talk about, you know, treatment reform and patient brokering, and another day-to-day was just traveling to Alaska and visiting those things. So my schedule changes all the time. I'm really blessed that I get to travel and meet so many people in recovery and learn how different modalities act in different places. It's an experience.
Well, and I really, as I started off saying, I am so impressed with what you guys have been able to accomplish. You know, I remember I met you two about a year and a half ago. I mean, that's a minute in life. And, you know, it's like, oh, hey, we're going to do this and we're going to do that. And I'm like, okay, do you know how many people come to me and say that? And
we came to plant the plants at the Reina V, and Ryan's like, no, we're getting on a bus and we're leaving. And we did.
Here, I was there being a good person. I was actually an amazing thing. Ted Collins, our friend who started Mober, this amazing app for sober people, he and I worked together to help do landscape a rehab, you know, that a free rehab. And here you guys stroll along just to come and schmooze, you know, hold foul for a second. I saw the go-getterness. I think one can be in this industry a little bit skeptical, and let's get into that, because I meet so few people who are in it for the right reasons. And I think that's what's impressed me most of all about what you guys are doing. So let's talk a little bit about the immorality in the recovery industry.
Sure. So I was just thinking about this earlier today, all week actually. But so I'm from South Florida, and I used to think that I was a very unfortunate person who never had health insurance. All my treatment centers were always public detox, public counties, public facilities. Nothing was ever paid for. And I was always like, oh, I never get to go to the nice treatment centers. And I like now seeing how everything is laid out, I'm like, I'm just one of the fortunate ones. I was talking to somebody the other day, and it's the same pattern. Everybody who went to that area of this country, and it was the same thing over and over. Same treatment center, same sober living, reoccurrence, back to the same treatment center, back to the same, and it would just go on and on and on and on. And now we're seeing it here in Southern California and all over the country, really. But so now it's like a perspective change when you're looking at it. It's like, oh, maybe I was fortunate to not have health insurance at the time and be put in a public facility. And it's a shame that we're a community that, you know, these treatment centers will pop up and they're here to help, but they're taking advantage of a very vulnerable group of people. And you know, if you're in recovery, those are my friends, you know, and I see them go in and out and in and out, and sometimes they don't come back out.
Yeah. I think a lot of what can happen is people go to treatment. And I mean, and certainly I think this was even more true 10 years ago. They would go to treatment and they were, they didn't have jobs anymore. So they started working at their treatment center. They started as a vet, they started as a driver. They looked around, they went, wow, people are making a lot of money here. And this is not at all an indictment of addicts, but sometimes that greed button can get pushed.
Absolutely.
And they're watching somebody who maybe doesn't have a lot of work experience making tons of money, and they're learning how to do it. And so these treatment centers just proliferated. I don't actually know right now how many treatment centers there are, but
I think it's over 10,000.
How many?
I think it's over 10,000 in the country.
Yeah, and that sounds right. And you know, and the number of them that are these, you know, these sort of luxury treatment centers that are, you know, doing some sort of nefarious things. It's a huge deal. It's in the news all the time now.
Yeah. And you brought up that, you know, I'm in support of people getting jobs right when they get out of treatment. And if they want to be in that industry, you know, all for it. However, when you are bred into it, for lack of a better term, and these owners, you know, put them through detox, through the treatment center, through their outpatient, and then boom, put them right back to work, they don't know what they're doing is wrong. They just know it from what they've seen for the last 90 days. And all of a sudden, yeah, I'm going to work here. Now I'm going to learn this. Now I'm going to learn that. Now I'm going to learn that. And then all of a sudden, oh, what do you mean I'm breaking the law? And unfortunately, it's a law that's not enforced. It's, you know, these patient brokering, the urine analysis scams. I mean, it's on. I don't want to sit here and say there are no good treatment centers either, because they are out there. And it's, you know, I see it every day. You talk to Ryan a lot, so you hear about what we witness. You know, and then there's this mentality that, and this comes from the recovery community, that when somebody comes out and they die, they're like, oh, they just didn't want it bad enough. And I'm like, my friend was in your treatment center 3 times this year. He was in sober living. He was in the outpatient. I mean, to me, that shows like some sort of willingness to be trying things, because I know that I wanted it a few times before I got it. But now those people will never get the chance to get recovery because they didn't make it. They wanted it. But that mentality needs to change. And, you know, we experienced some of that with, you know, all the people that were doing the Narcan trainings with. They were very open to us. They were very willing. But in the beginning, very apprehensive to allow patients, clients, whatever the term is. I don't want to get anybody upset. But they were very apprehensive. They're like, no, because if they know we have Narcan here, they're going to use. And I'm like, oh, that doesn't make any sense. But that's what, you know, especially on social media, it says that people are going to get used more because there's Narcan available, when actually statistics don't show that at all. Data doesn't show that at all. But once they went through Chad's, you know, training on it, all of their minds certainly changed, and we're going to go back and do them again with the patients and clients. But they were very apprehensive in the beginning.
Okay, let's just talk for a second about how illogical that is. The logic of that's going to make people use more, is it is implying that a person, an addict, is like, well, I wouldn't use, but I'm going to use because if I die, I'll come back. What addict is thinking like that? You know what I mean? You're just thinking, I want to escape how I feel. I'm going to do whatever I can. Die? I don't know.
I don't care. And personally, when I was out there, like, I wouldn't want to be brought back. Like, that was kind of like, I was like, whatever happens, happens. The crazy thing is when you're dealing with Narcan, you're dealing with opiate addicts, you're dealing with heroin addicts, Narcan puts you into withdrawal.
Right.
I don't fear death when I'm using. I fear withdrawal. Right. So why would I want to, Chad pointed out, so he's like, I might actually do a little less knowing that you might put me into withdrawal if I fall out. And the real story is, it's like, we're not here to, like, it wasn't even a discussion of will people use more, will they not. It's like, if somebody's going to die, here's a tool to save their life so then they could try again. And
right.
Unfortunately, that's missed on some people.
You know, it's interesting. I'm gonna bring up, because I think you were in treatment with him too, Tom Sizemore, whose book I wrote. Mm-hmm. Were you in treatment with him too? Okay, well, Ryan was. And this is in the book, so I can say it. He told me that when he was using heroin, if they heard somebody overdosed, they would go to that dealer because they're like, that's some really good shit. I mean, that's the logic that we're talking about.
I've done that. Like,
really?
I've physically have, there was, all right, quick story, but I went down to deep into Miami one day, not where I normally would go, and I bought some. And me and my friend, we used. He overdosed, and I spent a year looking for that exact guy, that exact spot, trying to find that one thing that did that to him. And thank God I never found it again. But
wow.
I mean, I did for a year, like compulsively, like when I could, I would go down there. But, you know, that's the disease of this thing. It's like there was no logical thought to it. It was like, that was the best. That's where I'm going. That's what I'm going to find. No, it didn't work out that way.
Yeah. Well, I can speak for many people when I say I'm glad it didn't work out that way. You know, one thing I wanted to talk about is, okay, this idea of sharing our stories. And this idea, you know, you guys help publish a lot of people's stories, right?
Right.
So that is something, the Voices Project is something where you're helping to tell people's stories. Have you seen people's recovery transformed or changed as a result of putting their stories out there?
Absolutely. I mean, it's inevitable, really. Like, for me, I could just say, like, once I've told everyone, basically, I am, like, held accountable now. Like, people know that I am in recovery. And, like, I'm always, I mean, for a while, I haven't been asked if I'm doing all right, that, you know, they can see it, but it gives you accountability. It gives you a sense of purpose. And for me, like, I've been denied jobs. I've been denied housing. I've been denied all these things because of my past. But when somebody actually gets to talk to me and meet me, and I'm willing to not hide it anymore, it's like, why is this gap in your employment history? Where were you? What were you doing? And it's like, no, I can explain it. I know it says that on the thing, but this is actually the situation, and I've actually like been able to get what I need to get done in my life. So it gave me power, it empowered me, and you could see the messages that come in if you could see them. But when I see them and I read them, it definitely people. It's always, you know, once Ryan told his story, and then he told me, we're going to go sit with this congresswoman and you're going to tell her your story. And I was like, okay, that sounds good. You know, it's like, what do I do now? What do I do now? That was great. What do I do now? And then those are the messages that come following it. So you know that it's working because people are like, what am I going to do now? I told my story. Where else can I go? What can I do to help?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I've watched, okay, Richard saying hi. Hi, Richard. Hey. Hi, Sarah. Hi, Raymond. And Rodney, thank you guys so much for chiming in, by the way. You know, if you guys have any commentary, Sarah's been commenting a lot, you know, on sharing your stories. did you Ryan's comment? So, you know, on your experiences, maybe if you have hesitations about it, you maybe don't want to put it in a comment because then I'm going to blast your name across the thing, but maybe that's just what you need, you know, to be forced out like that. But I know that I've seen in the 10 years or so that I've been doing this work, I mean, the number of bloggers, and that there was nobody out there telling their stories. And now we're in an era that we've never been in before, where, you know, there are so many of us being public about it. So, you know, I just read this interesting study where people with high blood pressure, go with me for a second, what heals them, hearing other people with high blood pressure tell stories about having high blood pressure lowers their blood pressure. Now, how boring is a story about high blood pressure compared to a story about addiction and recovery? So I think it's really interesting because, like, we don't just help heal ourselves, but we're helping, I'm not saying we are, but if you are someone who is sharing your experience, strength and hope, or whatever it is, you're actually helping other people by telling your story.
Yeah. And you become part of the community. Like, you're part of it. Like, you're talking about it, you're not alone anymore. And if you look at, there's so many ways people recover, but the one common denominator in all of that is community.
Yeah.
It's always there. It's always involved in any sort of which way, whether it's religion or 12-step or, you know, however you find recovery, community is always part of that.
Yeah. And Rodney is pointing out, first of all, one of the positives of social media. Absolutely. And the positive of commenting on blogs, you know, to me, it just felt like this den of hatred. And now people are, you know, post such positive and supporting things. And, you know, as Rodney's pointing out, it sharing stories helps motivate other people. And, you know, hearing a story like yours, which I didn't actually know that you were in treatment multiple times and that you've been to jail and all of that. People out there who are going, well, I, you know, there's no, I've already been to treatment. I've tried. It's not going to work. So people like you who are telling those stories and going, yeah, I was in that position too, and look at me now, I think is really, really important.
Yeah, I did not get this on the first try.
And Raymond, I'm getting, so sorry, Rodney and Raymond, I'm getting you confused for a second, but Raymond had his gallbladder removed with no narcotics, wouldn't trade it for what I have today. A few days of pain is nothing compared to that life of misery. Absolutely. And Sarah is saying the stigma is that an addict is such a bad, sorry, and other negatives. When we share, we help our own and other self-worth, you know, and Ryan and I kind of got into it because I have a strong feeling that we should not, that we should be using the word addict. And I know lots of people don't agree with me on that. But
I think my opinion on that is, I think it really depends on the audience. We were sitting with a retired politician, and he was talking to us like normal. And then we went into like, oh, by the way, I'm a recovering heroin addict. And he's like, you're not a heroin addict. I know a heroin addict. He's got track marks all up and down, you know, his arms, and, you know, drained life. He's nothing left in him. but because that's the perception that he hears when he hears heroin addict or the word addict, that's what he sees. So it's like maybe, you know, language is important, and I guess it really does depend on who you're talking to. So I try to be mindful of it when I speak outside of the recovery, but also in the recovery community too. When somebody says, you know, I'm a junkie, and I'm like, I'm not a junkie. Like I don't live that life anymore. So to keep saying that does not really reflect who I am, because I'm not a junkie for sure.
Okay. Well, here's one thing that I will say. You know, I used to go on Hannity and Colmes a lot, and this is like a hot rod name right now. He always was, but Sean Hannity, the first time I went on, I was going on to promote Party Girl, and it was like Paris Hilton and Lindsay Lohan, all these people were making news for like their party antics. And I said on the show, you know, as an addict in recovery, blah, blah, blah. And after the show, Sean Hannity takes me aside and goes, wait, you're a drug addict? It literally had never occurred to him that a drug addict could look like someone who wasn't whatever he had in his mind. And I'm not saying I changed Sean Hannity's mind about what that was, but I think it can be useful when you can sort of go, wow, this is a different vision than what you might have had.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Did I just sway you? Okay, so I'm going to start getting towards wrapping up. Yeah. This has been so fun. I'm so glad that you guys have been watching. Is there, Garrett, anything else that you want to say? Was it not as bad as you thought it was going
to
be?
No, it wasn't as bad. But I don't mind talking to you, so.
You kind of admit it. You had the best time.
I had a great time. It wasn't that bad at all.
Okay, well, don't say that or I'm going to make you come back. And then I'm going to make you get on stage on one of my storytelling shows, so just be careful.
I got a few funny stories. I don't know if I could get on stage, but.
Whoa. Next show, September 15th.
I think I'll be out of town. But.
Nice. Okay. Well, listen, Garrett, thank you so much. You guys, thank you so much for watching. Every Tuesday, I do one of these chats, 4:00 Pacific Standard Time. I am actually doing it on Monday of next week and not Tuesday, because I'm going to be traveling, not that interesting. And it is going to be with Lara Frazier. And so tune back in. Garrett, I probably will talk to you or see you like tomorrow or something. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Get it. Okay, bye.
Bye.